you describe yourself as a pagan and you practice forms of witchcraft, as it's called, right? And it's interesting because just reading again, reading and just hearing you talk about just connecting to these things that are right there in front of us, very simple things, but that is there's something about that speaks to magic and how maybe because I think growing up in this culture, I'm living in the United States, of course. I'm sure it's very, I don't know if it's as similar as it is here in the UK, but this sort of idea that magic is this ethereal, this sort of thing that's hard to really like understand. It's like you have to be born with some special kind of magic powers to be able to use it or understand it, or it's just viewed as just pure superstition. But to me, it seems, again, back to this word basic, which is that it's actually just as basic as learning how to like cook and forage and like know the plants and the life around you and having a some sort of communication with that. Is that accurate to you? Is that does that seem at least the beginnings of that?
Yes, it absolutely is, because even when I talk to people who aren't necessarily into witchcraft, or and you're talking about what you do. So, for example, I work in a school. It's a very small school. It's a charity school, and I'm very open about what I do. But my colleagues find it fascinating, and none of them would kind of describe themselves as being anything like pagan or witchy or anything like that. But they're also interested, and when I really break it down and tell them what it is, they're like, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I feel that way as well, and so. It's just, I suppose, getting people to see the world in a different way. And again, it goes back to capitalism because we're all so busy. Most people work long hours in jobs that they don't particularly enjoy or want to work if they were given the choice. And so their free time becomes precious, but it also becomes their chance to just switch off. And so a lot of people. They work long hours in hard jobs and they're physically and mentally and emotionally tired and drained when they come home. And so they just want to sit down in front of the TV and, I don't know, watch some mindless shit.
Sure.
And, and so it becomes one of those things where you get into the habit of doing that. And so I feel like taking things slowly, really just getting people to connect with where they live. Because we have to be sensitive to the fact that people are tired, they are emotionally drained, they're, if you're struggling to live and survive and all of that kind of stuff, well, it takes a toll. And so if I was to say, you need to go here and do this and do that, they're like, oh no,
Yeah.
I'm not interested. I just want to sit down and not think.
Right.
So it's just about getting people to really see where they live, I suppose, with new eyes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's crucial. And I do want to ask, I mean, this is jumping off into the magic thing a bit. I am curious. I don't know much about Obeah. Am I saying that correctly? Obeah?
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah. Like not many people do. So I say it's Jamaican witchcraft, but it has its roots in Africa, in West Africa, and obviously the slave trade and how, all of that kind of
Sure.
stuff. And so my family come from Jamaica, and my dad was born in Jamaica, and my grandparents came over from Jamaica to the UK in, I think it was the 50s. And my dad was, so what used to happen was the parents, well, the husband would come over first, then my gran came over, and then they sent for my dad like a year later. So they'd come over and get established and then send for the children. So Obeah is, I call it Jamaican witchcraft, and it often gets conflated with voodoo, but it actually isn't. And so I call it Jamaican witchcraft because essentially it is a system of magic. And I often talk about Nanny of the Maroons. She's a Jamaican national hero, but she was also an Obeah woman, and she was a slave who was taken from Ghana, and she was basically responsible for the Maroons receiving freedom. They fought the British and won them, which is pretty incredible at the time if you think about, they were slaves, so they didn't really have anything. They used the knowledge of the land and all of and their cunning, I suppose, for want of a better word, to really defeat them. And so it has its roots in that, but as a result, it became a beer became illegal to practice in Jamaica, and it's still illegal now. So yeah, it's pretty similar to, I would say it's pretty similar to folk. It's a folk magic tradition, as opposed to, I don't know, a systemized practice. Mm-hmm. It gets equated a lot with voodoo, but voodoo is a religion, and it, you know, it has its ways and set rituals and the way you do things. But Obeah is very different. I often say if you had 10 Obeah practitioners in the same room, which you would probably struggle to do anyway, each one of them would look very different from the next.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was because I am mixed race. So my mum is white English, my dad's Jamaican. And when I first, so I'd been practicing witchcraft, like traditional British witchcraft. Well, I don't know. I hate labels, sure, because as soon as you kind of start diving into it, you think, no, that's not quite right. But folk magic / traditional British witchcraft, I'd had an established practice. And it was actually when my dad came round one day and he was looking at my bookshelf and there was like, oh, witchcraft this and witchcraft that. And I think I was using, there's a book, I think it's called The Little Book of English Magic or something. And I was using it as a research tool just to like take notes and stuff. And my dad was like, what about Obeah? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what is that? And then I was lucky enough to find a family friend who practiced, because most people who practice it are very quiet about that practice. You know, it's not really some, which is why you don't really hear a lot about it, as well as it being illegal in a lot of the Caribbean islands, actually. And so, yeah, that is in a nutshell what it is. So I was lucky enough to find someone who taught me.
Well, I guess a couple questions come up, but the first is why, and it's, I know it sounds very naive, but why was it made illegal? And why is it still illegal to this day, do you think?
Well, to me, it all stems back to capitalism. So if we look at the slave trade in Jamaica at the time, so I don't know how much people know about the history of Jamaica, and I'm a bit of a nerd. When I get interested in something, I have to like find out everything about it. And so when Jamaica was discovered, it was
scare quotes.
And so by the it was discovered by the Spanish, and I think it was called Santiago at the time the country was. And then when Britain took control of it, it became known as Jamaica. And so the slaves from Africa, so what happened in the slave trade is that lots of tribes and lots of different peoples were brought to the Caribbean. And they were kind of mixed up because they didn't want the slaves of the same tribe or the same families in the same plantation, because that's just a recipe for trouble, of course, you know. So I think because part of the trouble is when we look at Africa, we look at it as Africa, and we don't recognize that Africa is a continent and that there are lots of different countries that make up Africa. And within a particular country, there are lots of different tribes as well. And so although languages might be similar, there's lots of difference as well. Which is how we come to Jamaican patois as well. And so Obeah practitioners were often seen as the trouble causers in the plantations. So they were the ones encouraging and really organising the rebellions and the uprisings and all of that kind of stuff on the plantations. And I think there's a couple of well-documented ones. Nanny of the Maroons, like, speaks to me. I don't know. She's just awesome. But there's loads. It's well documented. I think another famous one is Tacky's Rebellion. And so they were seen as like the trouble causers, because actually the Obeah men and women were seen as authority figures for the slaves. You know, they were people who had power and their words had power. And so it was Obeah was identified as being one of the major causes of rebellions and uprisings, and so, you know, we can't have that affecting profits, can we?
Right.
So, you know, it was pretty much outlawed, and it was outlawed using the same anti-witchcraft laws of like the 17th or 18th century in the UK. So there's always been that kind of link, I suppose. So yeah, that's
no that's really fascinating. That's really fascinating, because I guess I'm curious about this, which is, magic as being a form of effective resistance to like colonialism or slavery or capitalism. And it gives it, it's interesting because it's like, I would say the dominant culture like that exists within a white supremacist construct, like what I live in and I imagine what you live in as well, which is that let's just sort of push away this superstitious nonsense that these people believe. And yet at the same time, they're fucking terrified of it and they don't ever want them to practice it because there's like this weird acknowledgement of its power. You know,
I know. And weirdly, that still goes on today, you know. So people are like, well, do you really like, what do you do, when they ask me about what I do in like my general practice? And I always feel weird talking to people who have no idea what magic is, because it kind of does sound a bit crazy when you're just talking about it, you know. And I'm very aware of that.
Yeah.
It's just slightly odd. But, you know, and they go, oh, surely you don't believe in that kind of stuff. And whenever anybody says that, my stock response is, well, give me some of your hair then. And they're like, oh, no, no, no. So, you know, it's that kind of thing where there's that disbelief, but then there's also, they don't want to risk it.
Yeah.